Good evening, and it's Bernadette here at Saving Lives. We have Art doing all the controls.
Good morning. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you? And I am very excited to announce a special guest that we have here. He's involved with TOPAC, and it's the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation. And care to introduce yourself for us?
Yes. Thank you, Bernadette. Thank you, Art, for having me tonight. My name's Paul Ressler. I'm president, CEO, and founder of the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation.
It's amazing. And what brought you into this corporation? What brought you, this dream, this desire that you had to help people?
There was a shining moment, huh?
Which there always is.
Which wasn't very shining. My son Corey struggled with addiction starting at the age of 13. Mm-hmm. And this was in the year 2000. So I've been at this for 17 years. And needless to say, his journey, his path to destruction, brought myself and my family along with him. Unfortunately, it's just the way it works.
It's a family disease.
Yes, it is. And when he died on July 14th, 2010.
I'm so sorry.
In Jersey City, New Jersey, from a heroin overdose. And when I got the phone call from his roommate that Corey had died of an overdose, I had my aide drive me up to Jersey City. And when I arrived, his roommate got me before I went in to the apartment and told me that there was an attempt at a 911 call on Corey's cell phone, which we verified when I took possession of his belongings. And bottom line was, there was this attempted 911 call which was aborted, and it was aborted because all the people that he was using with that evening had to depart. They had to clean up the apartment, they had to take all the paraphernalia, the drugs, and they had to leave. And by the time they did all that, they called 911 again and Corey was dead.
It was too late.
Absolutely too late. And this was 2010, so there was no Overdose Prevention Act at that time. There was no Good Samaritan law. And it troubled me. It troubled me that his friends would not spare his life. Instead, they had to leave first and take care of themselves, which I got over that part of it real quickly because I realized that that was the nature of the beast at the time. Mm-hmm. And I felt it was extremely important that I had to help other families. I had to save lives. And the way for me to do that was, first, this was 2010, so this would have been August of 2010, when I got together with a few other parents throughout the state who lost their loved ones to overdoses, and we began to advocate for a Good Samaritan law. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy. The public was not ready for such an animal at the time. The stigma was very solid then, and awareness was at a very low side of it. There was very few discussions about heroin.
Swept under the rug.
Yeah, there was. And we began to go down to the state house and hang out and talk to assemblymen and senators. The need for some kind of a Good Samaritan law to help save lives, because people needed to feel comfortable calling 911 and not be concerned with being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
their biggest fear was probably getting in trouble and not thinking about a life.
Exactly, going to jail. They would have gone to jail.
Right.
And they didn't want to do that. So with the help of this 10 people or so, we started to make some progress by engaging the efforts of Senator Joseph Vitale, a New Jersey senator, out of Middlesex County. and the Drug Policy Alliance, which is located in Trenton. And they wrote the first Good Samaritan bill together. It went through the Senate, went through the Assembly, and it went up to the governor's desk, and it sat on his desk for 45 days. After 45 days, if there was no, if he didn't decide anything, it would be automatically vetoed and would have to go all through the system again, which means it'd have to go through the Assembly, the Senate, all that stuff.
And a whole other 45 days.
No, maybe a couple of years.
Yeah, wow. It's a very slow
process. So, but what he did was he decided that he needed some additional information, and he vetoed it conditionally, meaning that he could spend some time researching the allegations from the Attorney General that this would just be insane to give a drug dealer the label of a Good Samaritan law.
Right.
And unfortunately, he didn't realize that that's not what normally happens. Drug dealers
aren't the ones hanging out with
the
people.
They're not hanging out with the people they're serving, so
correct,
to speak. And it took us a while to convince him and the Attorney General of that, but we did. And he wanted to do a 180-day research project, and we just would not let up. We kept pounding and pounding. And by the way, when I say this like in a negative way about the governor, but from my perspective, he brought a lot of great initiatives to this state, better than any other state in the country. He did a great job.
Was that Christie who was in?
Yes, Governor Christie, yes. It's a different attorney general. I know people have issues with him, but I don't. And I'd vote for him again, knowing his policy on addiction.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Definitely.
So I am proud to say that I know him, and he's sincere and he really cares. So anyway, while he was sitting back waiting, spending some time doing so-called research, he basically, here I'm doing like apostrophes, you know, quotes.
Quote unquote.
he basically, a naloxone bill came along, naloxone being the medication that will reverse an overdose.
Mm-hmm.
That came along, and we had a good bill for that too. And he took the two bills and he combined them and signed the Overdose Prevention Act into law on May 2nd, 2013. So you could see it took almost 3 years.
Wow. And we just celebrated the fourth anniversary.
Just celebrated the fourth anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's not that old. I mean, it's
very recent.
Right. So I felt that we really needed to get the word out. Awareness had to be key. I didn't trust the public, because although they should know about this,
they don't.
And they still don't.
But you figure 4 years ago, or longer than 4 years ago, how strong was this stigma then, even though we've made some progress?
Right. I mean, it's still strong.
It was huge. It was huge. Right. It was,
and
like,
the stigma is still like, ooh.
Yeah, but we've come a long way.
It's getting better. It's definitely
really
getting better.
We've come a long
yeah.
way with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have this great law, and it became time really to promote it. And my concern again was that the public would never hear about it, because, you know, many good laws go by and people don't even know about it. So I formed the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation in would have been March of 2014. We went live with our website November of 2014, and actually it was at that time that the governor had completed a pilot program in five really serious counties and decided that he really wanted to provide training for all police departments throughout the state,
mm-hmm.
and provide opportunity and make naloxone accessible to yeah. law enforcement and EMTs, because also at the time, EMTs were not allowed to carry naloxone. He removed that restriction. At the time, only paramedics.
Which doesn't make sense to me.
No, I don't believe there is not an officer in the state of New Jersey that does not carry knives.
There are.
Even
there are.
What? Really?
There are, yeah.
But
they must be the rookies.
Few
or something.
And far between.
No, the rookies are more willing to do it than the
right.
than the veterans.
Oh,
in fact, there's, I think it's 595 police departments in the state, and I believe that 591 carry naloxone.
That's pretty good percentage. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a great percentage, yeah. But amongst some of those other stations, police organizations, they still don't carry. But for the most part, especially in Mercer County, the police are great.
Right.
They do a great job around here. Hamilton.
Here, I believe every municipality in Mercer County carries.
Yes, they all carry. Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's, you know, Angelo Onofre, our prosecutor, has really supported that immensely, and really has taken really good stance on that, and encourages that to continue. Mm-hmm.
Now, someone asked me a question recently, and they said, now, the fact that, you know, addicts know that naloxone, or I always call it naltrexone, that it's available more easily. Do you think that, like, an addict would test the fate a little bit more, knowing that? Well, and I had to ask myself that question, because I'm in recovery.
It's funny you ask that question, because, you know, I just had my middle daughter, you know, here going through recovery before, you know, she went back to Oregon.
Yeah.
And she was going to somewhere over on Quaker Bridge Road. And, you know, she told me everything when she came back, the discussions they had, mm-hmm. you know, off the record, you know, between themselves. And there were kids there that they said, you know what I mean, that there's somebody, you know, they have parties where there's naloxone. I have a hard time believing that, because heroin's a loner drug.
Right.
it's not a social, you know, you're not a social butterfly when you're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, too, that addicts are not known for their ability to reason very well.
Right. While we're under the influence, by any means.
Especially, and so, you know, you're going to have, like, a designated individual.
You know,
who's
I still think you're going to have those few that think, hey, if I have somebody here that has naloxone, yeah. But what happens if they're using something that has fentanyl in it?
It's very high risk.
And that's what it is now. That's what the drugs are. It's fentanyl. That's what they're getting.
I get asked that question a lot, and I don't buy it.
Yeah, it's still personally. A roll of the dice. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Of course it is. And sure, some people will use that as a way to achieve a greater high, right. But not a lot.
Right.
Not a lot. And you know,
or it's just the naysayers trying to put a little bad quotation around it. Like, see, it doesn't work.
You used when you used.
Yeah.
I get that all the time. Exactly right.
Not at first.
Most heroin.
But I didn't get to the heroin.
Right.
Most heroin users, if they overdose, they're usually by themselves.
Yeah. Right. And I know if it gets to that, like when you're the pill popper or the alcoholic, it's a little different. You know, you are with a lot of people, but when you are doing that harder thing, a lot of times, like, I didn't want the people I was around to know what I was doing, or the extra that I didn't want them to know.
So here we are now. We have this great law, and I promote it as well as other people throughout the state. And we have no public funding. It's all private, all donations. Makes it hard for us because we can't expand, but we started our first training in, I think, March of 2015. And so in 2 years, we've trained over 2,000 people.
That's incredible.
We've given out over 1,800 Evzio kits, which is the one that we promote, and we've given out nasal sprays as well.
I still have mine.
Oh, and you know,
it's good you haven't had to use it.
And as a result, we've had another reversal reported today, so
Beautiful. We
can attribute 46 reversals, and we track them, so there's double that.
But right.
46 reported to us, and we're really proud of that. You know, my volunteers are great. I have wonderful volunteers. This is not something a person could do by themselves. And I don't ever want to take credit for the progress that we have made, because it's been a group of volunteers that have made it possible. Mm-hmm. They're very supportive of me.
I know in my area there was, in 2016, there was 301 saves with, you know, that treatment, the naloxone.
That's
huge.
Sure is.
And that's just in one little county that I'm from.
Is that Montgomery? Is it?
Delaware County.
Delaware, yep. I know a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down there to do some training. Us,
that's good.
Ourselves. So, as I mentioned, Corey was 22 when he died. And I have another son who's surviving, and he's wonderful. Never had to deal with this addiction. He's 39. Corey would have been 29 in November. he'll be dead 9 years. I'm sorry, 7 years in July. It's hard to imagine. A couple weeks, it'll be 7 years. So the path we've traveled as a family, and the family is still not where I'd like it to be, but, you know, sometimes things don't happen as quickly as you'd like them to. But one of the things that my family and I had, the three of us, my son, both my sons and myself, is we really loved music.
Mm-hmm.
And I go way back, you know, to the 50s, and I consider myself a historian of sorts, particularly with R&B music. And I introduced my sons to Sam Cooke. And lo and behold, one of the most amazing songs that gives faith. Sam Cooke came from the gospel world. His original group was Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers. And Sam was an amazingly talented writer. And he went into the secular world, and his songs were great. But he took a gospel song, converted it into a secular song, which speaks to me about where we are and where we're going, and my firm belief that a change is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Art.
I have the song right here.
That's your cue.
Hit it.
The change is going to come.
Sam Cooke.
Such a beautiful song.
Sam Cooke was an amazing artist. Amazing artist. And there's so much meaning to that song that has helped me through some pretty difficult times. And I know Corey was struggling with his addiction. It helped him often, too, because it gave him some hope that a change is going to come. And, you know, you can define that change in many different ways. So Sam Cooke, 1950s, mid-50s, when that song was released, was recorded and released. And, you know, as we proceed through time, I witnessed, personally witnessed, the epidemic starting. And I got myself into some trouble with individuals in the area who kind of considered me to be annoying and a pain and would not accept certain things. And
I wanted to say welcome, because I feel like people think that about me too. Welcome.
I think it's a club.
Yeah, right?
But like I said, I'm a big fan of the Serenity Prayer, and the one that really gets me the most is that, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, okay? So my son's death, I could not change that, so I had to accept it. But the next one is the courage to change the things I can. And I knew that I was going to fight this thing until I could help with other folks, not just me, make some changes. And guess what? It didn't happen as fast as I wanted it to, but it is happening today. And, you know, the world now is a little bit more aware of the epidemic, which, when my son was using, was really starting to beef up again. It was starting to get really bad again. And I was out there trying to get people to pay attention to it. And it didn't really work that well. They didn't.
They weren't ready to listen.
No, and look where it brought us. You know, how did we get here today?
Lost a lot.
Well, adults are the reason we're here where we are today. Pharmaceutical companies, politicians and doctors. Overprescribing, politicians getting paid off from the insurance company, from the
lobbyists,
from the Purdue Pharma especially. And Purdue Pharma just buried the country. So the Northeast was really from, opiates that were pain medication. The middle of the country was the pine tar heroin, which came up from Mexico. And on the West Coast, they were still doing cocaine. So basically, as I said, I was as responsible as anyone else for not listening to what I was hearing myself. You know, if I wasn't involved with my son, I never would have gotten involved at all. Mm-hmm. Never. I would not have done it. So I blame myself for that, because I was selfish, self-centered, and not my son, not my beautiful son. And that's true of society. And we allowed this epidemic to get to where it is today. And it's pretty serious. 140 people a day die in this country.
We've lost 500,000 since 2000.
Mm. Yep. It's over 50,000 individuals a year now. It took a while to build to that, but now it's like 54,000-55,000 Americans die
last year.
A year. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, that's on, you can in
which
any
is a
way.
Huge jump. I was just working on a project gathering these numbers, so yeah. I'm pretty familiar with them, and mm-hmm. it the jump is unbelievable.
Oh, it's astronomical.
Massive, yes. And just in New Jersey, there's been over 25,000 reversals. Just in New Jersey. 25,000 individuals and families. Now, there were several of those people who had several overdoses, but so what? There's still a person, there's still important, there's still somebody's child or,
It's devastating having one overdose in a family. Nevertheless, there's families that have had several.
Multiple,
Yep. And so from a historical standpoint, I went back and I wanted to hear, initially, like back in the 70s, there were a lot of musicians who were very, very hooked into heroin, big time. And they were dying. You can just go back and read about all these musicians, jazz musicians, some very well-known ones.
And they're still dying, too.
Well,
even the musicians to this day.
Yeah, all actors, musicians. Billie Holiday, one of my favorite jazz singers, she had a serious addiction problem. That's that from the movie The Lady Sings the Blues.
Yeah.
Diana Ross, that was about Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
And I really listened to her music a lot. She was just one of the most amazing singers.
It was like Amy Winehouse. I mean, what an incredible voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Remarkable.
Another one.
Yeah. Remarkable. That's recent.
Yeah.
That's more recent. So I went back and I know James Brown had a very, very serious addiction problem back in the 70s. And in the, I think it was like 1976, he wrote a song called King Heroin. And that song was a little bit more about being involved in the day-to-day issue with addiction and heroin. 20 years later, the problem was getting even worse. And he wrote a follow-up to that. Excuse me. And it was like a letter to America about heroin. So we're going to play that. This is James Brown doing a song called King Heroin.
Here it goes.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow Americans, lady Americans, this is James Brown. I want to talk to you about one of our most deadly killers in the country today. I had a dream the other night and I was sitting in my living room. I dozed off to sleep, so I started dreaming. I dreamed I walked in a place and I saw a real strange, weird object standing up talking to the people. And I found out it was heroin, that deadly drug that go in your veins. He said, I came to this country without a passport. Ever since then, I've been hunted and sought. My little white grains are nothing but waste, soft and deadly and bitter to taste. But I'm a world of power, and all know it's true. Use me once, and you'll know it too. I can make a mere schoolboy forget his books. I can make a world-famous beauty neglect her looks. I can make a good man forsake his wife, send a greedy man to prison for the rest of his life. I can make a man forsake his country and flag, make a girl sell her body for a $5 bag. Some think my adventure's a joy and a thriller, but I'll put a gun in your hand and make you a killer. In cellophane bags I found my way to heads of state, to children at play. I financed in China, ran in Japan, I'm respected in Turkey, and I'm legal in Siam. I take my addicts and make them steal, borrow, beg. Then they search for a vein and the arm of the leg. So be you Italian, Jewish, black or mix, I can make the most virile of men forget their sex. So now my man, you must, do your best to keep up your habit until your arrest. Now the police have taken you from under my wing. Do you think they dare defy me, I who am king? Now, you must lie in that county jail, where I can't get to you by visit or mail. So squirm with discomfort, wiggle and cough. 6 days of madness, and you might throw me off. Curse me in name, defy me in speech, but you'd pick me up right now if I were in your reach. All through your center, you become resolved to your fate. Fear not, young man or woman, I'll be waiting at the gate. And don't be afraid, don't run, I'll not chase. Sure, my name is Heroin, and you'll be back for a taste. Behold, you're hooked, your foot is in the stirrup, and make haste. Mount the steed and ride him well, for the white horse of heroin will ride you to hell, to hell. will ride you to hell until you are dead. Dead, brother. Dead. This is a revolution of the mind. Get your mind together and get away from drugs. That's
man, if those words couldn't be more any truer than true.
Well, that was 21 years ago. And he had kicked the habit. And his first song, King Heroin, was, like I mentioned, it was a really hands-on, sitting in a room using, shooting up. But this one is a message to the country and to the world. And I thought, I don't know, I think he did just a marvelous job, really, of, you know, describing who heroin is, because what it does to people. So
and like, that's the truth, that's the reality of it.
That song is the truth. That's what he said. This is the truth. And you know, it's important for people to listen to songs like that. Of course they don't, only I do.
Not necessarily. That's going to be on my new list of listening to all the time.
Oh, okay. So that's why, I think music
is... I think I'm going to play some of this on our radio station.
Anytime, man. Anytime you want. I got a lot of other stuff, Art. You can go to my the jukebox on Topak anytime. Grab anything you want.
And last week, we actually reviewed...
I know.
The whole Ernie White and Friends.
Ernie White and Friends.
With Tom
Yeah.
Actually, I went and saw Tom in Robbinsville last Saturday.
Yeah, they're just amazing, those guys. There's like four or five of them all. You know, Ernie is like amazing human being. Just a great, great artist.
Ernie, Mario.
Oh, yeah, all those guys.
Mark Sacco.
Yep. Yeah, the whole group. They've been at it for years. And the work that Ernie did with Till We See You Again, and you know, my song basically was written by Harry Philkin, which is Blood of My Blood, and we'll stay away from those tonight. They're great songs and great lyrics, but I want to try to accomplish something else tonight. So here we are. It's 2017, and no one listened to James Brown. Just think, here's this famous, world-famous artist. You know, everybody knows James Brown. It's like everybody knew Muhammad Ali. Everybody knew James Brown. And he knew what he was talking about. He watched a lot of his friends die. And
he had experience.
Yes, he did. And you could hear his heart. It was a heartfelt message to the country, basically, or to the world. So here we are. You know, we're trying to get a handle on where we are today and what we've done that hasn't worked. So let me just say this. Just about everything we've done has not worked. Prevention has been a failure. I'm at great odds with the organizations in this state who have been doing prevention for over 30 years. Now, wouldn't it make sense to you, being a person with some intelligence, that this epidemic is getting worse and worse, and the stuff you're preaching doesn't work?
To me...
Is that a complicated formula?
It really is. The prevention really needs to be in elementary school.
Oh, well, that's just a whole nother issue. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that it took them 31 years to finally start doing some meaningful things. One is that Knockout Opiate Day, October 6th. We had one last year. It's just a great day. I don't even want to mention names of anybody or any organizations. I promised myself I would be nice and calm tonight. and I'm doing a pretty good job, right?
You're doing great. You're doing absolutely wonderful.
So
we rock the boat when it needs to be rocked,
exactly.
Right, Paul?
Well, yeah, and we need to be involved. And I mean, I think you hit on it. Prevention. We're not gonna catch up to the epidemic. We're following it. We're way behind the epidemic.
We're not even keeping even keel with it.
No, we're not even close, and we're losing a generation. My son's generation. Another generation. And the only real way to really put an end to it, from my perspective, is education.
It.
No, education in our school systems. You know, early elementary school, middle school, and high school. The kids themselves are the ones who need to be able to end this epidemic
and not continue it. I think the education needs to come from someone with experience, too, in that lifestyle.
Well, it needs
to come
from...
You're trying real hard to get me angry, aren't you?
It's coming...
It
should come
from... No, but
from,
there's times where I would love to go back to my school in my high school and, like, get on the stage and just, like, preach, but it's so hard to even be allowed to do that.
But again, is it going to be more meaningful for it coming out of someone their age who's walked those steps and who's gone through recovery and can tell their story, or is it from some lawyer who's standing up there telling from the prosecutor?
Please don't do this. Don't do this to me.
Uh-oh, we're getting riled up.
No, this is isn't fair. If he had told me this, I wouldn't have come. I'm only kidding. No, I mean, it's not even individuals who are in recovery or struggling. That helps, but it's kids who want to stay clean. It's getting in there and teaching them about the epidemic, teaching them about the deaths that are happening. So I spoke at a school up in Rockaway Township. It was a pretty big middle school, and there were 323 middle school students in a gym. There were eighth graders in a gym, and they asked me to come up and speak, and I really put it on their shoulders. I said, listen, this is all up to you guys. You got to be smart. You got to be intelligent. You cannot allow anyone to take you out one night to smoke weed or to use drugs. You have to learn ways to defend that. So, you know, if somebody says to you, come on, let's go smoke some weed, and you have to say, well, I can. I've got, I don't know, schoolwork, or my mother's taking me clothes shopping. You need to provide those outs, and you need to be willing to address a friend of yours who may be becoming addicted. And kids will do that. They will call each other out on that. So education in all the way up through high school is key.
And I think the doctors need a little bit more education also.
Yeah, I didn't get to that yet.
I was going to say, for me, a lot of it started, I was in a bad accident, a car accident. It was last rites, the whole nine yards. And I was prescribed opioids for years. Yeah. And I didn't know that it was a problem until a new doctor wouldn't prescribe me those anymore. And I found other ways and means to get them.
Yep, that's exactly right. And we're making progress there as well. There's been some changes in the law where you can only prescribe five days of opiates on the first visit.
That's huge. That's great.
And then, you know, if it's an elderly person who's struggling.
Do you know if that carries over to dentists as well?
Yes, Paul? It does. It does.
Because, you know, that's where a lot of this really started.
Don't you think parents should be part of that?
Yeah, but as good parents, what did we do? I made sure my child took that Percocet every 6 hours.
No, that's what I'm saying. Well, that changed now. So, you know, I went and had a tooth pulled, and the dentist says to me, do you want some drugs? And I said, you got to be joking. He said, what do you mean?
Right, like, why would they even like offer for that?
Don't worry about it, man. I'll take Advil.
Yeah, there's alternatives.
Yeah, there sure is.
And, you know, listen, you could get through it together as a family with, you know, being there for each other.
But, you know, years ago, we weren't educated about going to the dentist and 35 Percocet was going to
do
all this damage.
But
right?
Now we are.
So, you know, on that kind of things like that, we can't always be looking back. We got to be looking
forward.
And you need to be proactive. You bring your child in for, you know, having a tooth pulled or whatever.
But that's where parents need to be educated as well as the children.
Yep.
I mean, there needs to be
He's going to get me going.
I'm trying to stir the pot.
He's trying really hard.
Usually pretty good at it.
Right.
No, I mean, I think that that this Knockout Opiate Day, October 6th, were you part of that last year?
Actually, we were, but I was in California.
Right.
I was phone support.
Yeah, but what happens with Knockout Opiate Day, and last year was a big success, is that the emphasis really is on getting the word out to parents and the word out to doctors and to, schools about prescribing opiates for pain. So there are several pamphlets and these little things you hang up.
You're good.
All right?
You're all right.
Okay. Sorry about that, gang. And basically, these little cards that we hand out, it talks. You know, my son broke his leg playing football. Here's what you do. Here's what you look forward to. Mm-hmm. So we gave out over 2,000 of those in parking, in malls and, ShopRite parking lots and Acme parking lots. We want to give out 5,000 in Mercer County this upcoming year. And, if you're interested, all organizations should give myself a call or Barbara Spreckman a call at the Prevention Coalition of Mercer County and stay aware of when that's going to be. It's huge. And it's a start.
Isn't that what we did last year, Paul?
Yep.
At the firehouse. We should start planning that again for this year. Last year, we kind of did it last minute.
I don't know. You guys did the firehouse. I didn't do the firehouse. City of Angels did the firehouse.
No, I thought it was all three of us. I thought it was you.
No, that's not what this was.
Recovery Advocates and us.
No, that's not what this was. This was going out into the community and sharing this information. So it's going to work. So that's a good effort. That's prevention.
Oh, that was the putting the knockers on the doors, right?
Right. Okay. Yes, that's what that was, yeah. So that's prevention. And that's meaningful prevention that will work. It'll definitely work. And, we had ER staff. We went to all the hospitals and handed it out into ER and in the waiting rooms. And it's going to be great this year. So I want to invite everyone to take part in that. Because it is part of education.
Mm-hmm. And the more soldiers on foot doing this, the more help that people are going to get and the more awareness that people are going to get.
And we want to get into the schools. That's a key. We want to get into the schools with this program. And I think we can now. The schools have always been an issue. And I personally believe they continue to be. But we're working hard at it. We have to get into the schools.
It's getting a little better. I mean, we were able to get into Steinert and I believe Hamilton West.
City of Angels been into the schools, but that's...
I know Mike Steered Strait's been in Nottingham.
Yeah, but that's not what
I know.
I'm
we have Sam, Art's daughter here, who just chimed in, but she won't put her face to the microphone to say what she was saying. What was that?
No. We did. Go ahead, Sam.
She's not going to do it.
Oh, my God.
We'll get her one day.
So, we were out there at all these different places. But it has to be a concerted effort. Can't be, in other words, got to be more massive, more people involved.
Yep.
And the only way you do that is by organize. So put it on your calendar.
Is it October 6th?
October 6th. If you're paying attention, we'll be reminding you through the radio station.
Yes, every week.
I'll be keeping you guys updated on to what's going on. All right, so what's the time look like?
Yeah, about 15 minutes yet.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so what I want to do now is continue this trip through music and the story that musicians tell about addiction. And one of my favorite artists is Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Macklemore is a rapper.
Yes.
Ryan Lewis is his production guy.
I love him.
And they've done some great music. They had a big hit with Thrift Shopping. You remember that song?
Yeah.
Just a great song. But
we won't play that tonight.
Now we're going to play a better one.
Ben Haggerty actually is Macklemore. And Macklemore is his stage name. His name is Ben Haggerty, and he struggled with addiction his entire life.
And he lost a brother, too.
Brother, and he's written some great songs about alcohol. He did that song, Liquid Cathedral. His songs are so potent, so meaningful. So we're going to play one, and it's a song called Drug Dealer. So, Art,
here we go.
Let's hit it. Rip.
Drug Dealer.
I'm so excited.
wasn't a gateway drug. My homie was taking subs and he ain't wake up the whole while. These billionaires, stay caked up, paying up Congress so we take their drugs. Murderers who will never face the judge. And we dancing to a song about a face gone numb. But I seen homies turn gray, noses draining blood. I could have been gone, our 30s faded in that tub. That's Prince, Michael and Whitney, that's Amy Ledger and Pimp C, that's Yams, that's DJ AM. Goddamn, they're making the killing. Now it's getting the attention, cause Sarah, Katie, and Billy. But this shit's been going on from Seattle out to South Philly. It just moved about the city and it spread out to the burbs. Now it's everybody's problem, got a nation on the verge. Take activists off the market, jack the price up on the syrup. But Purdue Pharma's about to move that work.
The drug dealer was a doctor. Doctor had the blood from Big Pharma. Pharma, he said that he would heal me. But he only gave me problems, problems. My drug dealer was a doctor, doctor. Had the plug from Big Pharma, Pharma. I think he trying to kill me, kill me. He tried to kill me for a dollar, dollar.
And these devils, they keep on talking to me. They screaming, open the bottle. I wanna be at peace. My hand is gripping that throttle. I'm running out of speed. Try to close my eyes, but I just keep on sweating through these sheets for a horseman. They won't let me forget. I wanna forge a prescription. Cause doctor, I need some more of it. When morphine and heroin is more of your budget. I said I never use a needle, but sure, fuck it. I'm caught up, I'm on one, I'm nauseous. No options, exhausted. This is not what I started. Walking carcass, I lost everything I wanted. My blinds drawn, too gone to leave this apartment.
My drug dealer was a doctor, doctor. Had the blood from Big Pharma, Pharma. He said that he would heal me. But he only gave me problems, problems. My drug dealer was a doctor, doctor. Had the blood from Big Pharma, Pharma. I think you're trying to kill me. Tried to kill me for a dollar, dollar.
Re-up, re-up, death certificate signed the prenup. Ain't no coming back from this Percocet activist, Ambien, Adderall, Xanax binge. Best friends with the thing that's killing me. Enemies with my best friend, there's no healing me. Refilling these, they say it's debt, debt. Institutions and DOC, so God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The wisdom to know the difference.
I love that song.
It's an amazing song.
It is
so think about
incredible.
Think about James Brown's message. Think about Macklemore's message. Are they any different?
No, not one bit. They are all one and the same.
Not at all. I mean, that's just a masterpiece. It really is. Mm-hmm. And I get moved by that every time I hear it. It's mm-hmm. so on point. You know, and he brings in Big Pharma. You know, he brings it all in.
All the prescriptions that were prescribed that we get addicted to.
Amazing songwriter. So thank you, Macklemore, for bringing us current in this country of ours with regard to addiction. And there's plenty of other good stuff by him and many other artists as well. Maybe one day I'll come back. I'll pick out four other ones.
We have to get him into Slaves, too. Our one band that we love.
Oh, yeah.
Who is it?
Slaves.
Slaves?
Yeah. It's amazing. The one guy, he's in recovery, in and out of recovery. And,
I'll find it.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Good.
I might even have it on my in my jukebox. It could very well be.
Yeah, they enlightened me with that one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Go to, if you're interested in sharing the music we have on the Topak, in the Topak jukebox, just go to overdosepreventionagency.org and look for the tab for music. Go to the jukebox, and there's about 50.
There's a lot of music. A
lot of good stuff there mm-hmm. to listen to. A lot
songs
of
about addiction, some local artists that are just phenomenal.
Yep, recovery.
It's amazing the amount of musicians that suffer from the disease of addiction.
Well, it takes a very special state of mind I hate to say this because I don't want to make excuses for drugs amongst musicians, but it's hard to write.
Well, being on the road is a hard thing. You're away from your family. It's a lot of time hanging around. You're bored, and when you're bored, good things don't happen. You know? I mean, I spent 15 years on the road, and I tried to drink myself.
It's easy. It's easy to escape that way. But also, you know, a lot of musicians feel they need drugs to be productive as far as, you know, original lyrics.
Or they think that they get
the ones that I talk to now all go, man, I don't need anything. I can just write my heart.
Yep. Yes, they've been there. Mm-hmm. They've been there.
That's so Ernie and Tom. Mario, right.
Yeah, who knows what they went through in their early years. And Harry Philkin. Harry Philkin has written some great music. So here we are. It's, I believe the date is the 22nd of June, 2017.
And, second day of summer.
Yes.
And we're sitting
hot
here.
Hot day
at,
today. City
First
of
Baptist
Angels.
Church at City of Angels
Recovery Radio.
Recovery Radio with Bernadette and Art and
Sam. Who's very quiet.
She sure is. But she's laughing and thinking over
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
So, Paul, do you have any events coming up recently?
We do. Good point. July 31st, we have a golf outing right here at, I can never remember the name of the place.
Oh, Mercer Oaks.
Mercer Oaks. Wow.
In Mercer County.
How are you golfing?
Sycamore Road.
I'm horrible at golfing.
So we're having a fundraiser there, a golf outing, and with one of our sponsors, two of our sponsors, Ammon Labs. And Curexa, they're an online
and
pharmacy.
If they wanted, if somebody wanted to participate in the golf outing, how would they go about
doing that? Go to the website.
Topac website?
Yep, look for the event, and you can put foursome together.
Which you could search for the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation.
No, overdosepreventionagency.org.
Oh, really? That's it?
Yeah, that's a website.
He just wanted to correct you, that's all.
So he was just testing me. Right?
I know Topac was taking me.
Yeah.
It's something else.
We found another way to get around that. We'll break that news later. So, you can join us there. And on August 12th, we're having a bus trip, a fundraiser down to see the Phillies and the Mets.
That's right.
The beauty of that day is
hopefully the Phillies will actually win.
Well, we're not interested in that.
Oh, that's right. We're in Jersey. I forgot.
I'm a Dodger fan. So. But the reason it's really important
No, you're good. I was going to say my place of origin is coming out.
Oh, one of my favorite baseball players, Pete Rose, one of the most amazing players of all time, who they've prohibited from getting to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Well, the Phillies are welcoming him into the Phillies Wall of Fame. So Pete's going to be there.
Is he actually going to be there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that's a great trip. Again, you can find that online as well at the Overdose Prevention Agency. Check in with us. We'll help you get tickets. And I'm really looking forward to that one. And then we're going to take a little time off. We've been going since April. We had
a lot of fundraisers going on.
Yep.
And then it's going to be back to October 6th?
October 6th. That's not a fundraiser. That's just work.
Oh, okay. Right.
Which is good work.
Right.
That's actually an awareness day.
That's exactly right. So I guess on that note, gang, we done?
Pretty much. So I'm going to, and I like to always end with a little saying or a poem or a quote.
Sure, go for it.
So it's interesting that, you know, a little while ago you were mentioning, you know, you kept saying the word hope. And the topic or poem that I have today, it's called Hope. So, you know, how ironic how things kind of work out. So hope. Hope is a special something we cannot live without. We can all have hope, but we must not doubt. We hope things will get better when everything goes wrong. Hope gives us what we need. It helps us to be strong. It keeps us going when we're tired and helps us when we fall. If we hope for what we already have, then that's not hope at all. But hope for what we can't yet see is patient, calm, and waiting. Our minds must be controlled and quiet, all painful thoughts abating. All of life has purpose when we have something to believe. The gift of hope is a life-giving gift we hope one day to achieve. So I want to thank Paul so much for being here and giving us so much great information and for all the service that he does, you know, with the Overdose Prevention Agency.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Art, thank you for doing all your amazing mechanicals. And Sam, I'm so glad I got to finally meet you.
She's off for the summer, so she's probably going to be tagging you around for a while.
Thanks for the laugh, Sam.
Yes, thank you. And with that, we are out. Have a great night, everybody.
Yeah, we're going to end the song. We're going to end the evening with a song, song by Harry Philkin, and it's about not giving up on people, and always giving someone a second chance. So Harry Philkin. Song called Second Chance.
Hit it, Art.
Have a great evening.
Yeah.